Right, Bob Marley and the Wailers with No More Trouble. This is from the Wailers' first album, cut for Island Records in April of 1973. It is also the fifth studio album by the Wailers. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I am such a visionary. Well, I'm laughing at myself. I'm such a visionary that yesterday I predicted, I saw it in the clouds, that we were going to return to the same subject today. And so we are. And we'll be talking about that very soon. I just want to get a couple of things said. So we have what is his name? What was his name? Madoff, dying in prison, as he fully deserved. That was the news today, the big news, that he had died. They didn't say what of, but or what from, but he died. I just hope they made sure that he did die, and it's not the lead in to yet another ruse. Okay, so the Derek Chauvin trial is again continuing, and they tried to make a case. This is Chauvin's lawyers now, the defense lawyers, are trying to see if they can somehow divert the attention of the jury away from what the prosecution has laid out as the theory of the case. And they're hoping, of course, to try to get an acquittal. That ain't going to happen. Technically, in many cases, when it comes to the end or close to the end, the lawyers make an application to the court and ask for an acquittal. It's just a matter of course. They just have to do that to fulfill the oracle, I guess. But usually the judge would fulfill another oracle and say, no, there will be no acquittal in this case. We're going to the bitter end. So that's what is going to happen. True to form, as we had discussed yesterday, Derek Chauvin is not going to testify in his own behalf. Some people may say, well, that's a great, great plan, because if he had testified, but probably he'd be probably worse off. So take a chance, keep your mouth shut, let other people do the talking at this stage, because even at this stage, you have a lot more to lose than to gain. All right, so let's talk about what the strategy is at this point. The strategy at this point is to win. We may snicker, but because we don't see that he has a snowball's chance, but that may not necessarily be so. You never know how things work out in a court of law. And so even though we may find it absurd that this is the route they're taking at this late date, don't count anything out. Just keep your mind open that just about anything could happen, and for reasons we may not know for quite a while. So, what are they arguing? Essentially, they're making three points in this case. This is Chauvin's lawyers. They're arguing, and they're having witnesses speak to those points. They're not having Chauvin's direct testimony. I think they thought about that And I think they calculated that Chauvin may possibly really anger the jury if he testified. And in any event, even when he's not testifying, he may be angering the jury. So it's a no-win situation for him. But, you know, you have to admire how this system chooses to work, giving a lot of elastic to certain people and no elastic at all to others. And we know that we're talking about the element of race here, because that's been the historic application, unequal application of the law. So they're arguing that, where are my notes now? I have my notes. They're arguing that Chauvin's use of force, while it looked or may have looked to some as really horrific, really a turn off, really unnecessary, downright wrong, you have to keep in mind that sometimes in life, as in the law enforcement community, things have to happen so that worse things don't happen. Got that? Okay. So they have an expert, and this is where the experts come in. This is a whole new industry, by the way. You would find in high-profile cases, experts are paid a considerable amount of money to come in and express the opinion that the lawyer for the plaintiff or the lawyer for the defendant would like to express or would like to have expressed. They get paid very nicely, and they flaunt their credentials to make themselves instantly credible, and they have something to say at the expert level. We have no way of knowing whether they in fact are experts. But at least on paper, they appear to satisfy the inquiry. Are you an expert? Yes. What makes you an expert? Well, I've been a police officer for 46 years, and I've been in this division, that division, the other division, and just start rattling off things that make no sense to us, that we don't have any time to check or double check. We don't have time to do a background check on anybody. But once they are presented to the court as experts who will be rendering, of course, an expert opinion about something, then we hear from them. And miraculously, what we will hear from the experts will jive almost perfectly with what the lawyer, whether it's a defense lawyer or it's a prosecution lawyer, what that person offers would be pretty much exactly what the lawyer wants them to say, because it would help their case. So in this matter, we have an expert, police use of force expert, testifying today, and he has already made it clear where he is going, and he's going exactly where Chauvin's lawyer wants him to go. And that is that sometimes police work looks ugly. It's not a good thing to see. It could trouble every normal mind. But we are not, we are ordinary people. We are just the riffraff. We don't have an appreciation for what police officers see and want and need by way of protection in a very strange or dangerous situation. So to that point, the expert this morning talked about, although it might look ugly, that is the treatment accorded George Floyd by the accused, who is not testifying, not even in his own behalf, that's Derek Chauvin. Chauvin, nonetheless, in the situation he was in, acted appropriately. So that goes to the charge of excessive use of force. This expert echoed the line given by the lawyer for Chauvin, that Chauvin utilized proper skills in defending himself against a flailing and out of control person who he was supposed to arrest, who he was supposed to restrain. And so he had to utilize methods that, although they looked cruel and unusual and even extreme, were nonetheless appropriate. We ordinary people who don't have police experience would not know that, you see. We will be taking the situation quite literally, that here is a police officer behaving like an animal against somebody who was clearly at his mercy. And it didn't have to happen. That's the popular view. The expert is saying it ain't necessarily so. It may look a little rough. It was, in fact, a little rough, but it was well in line with the circumstance that Chauvin was dealing with, which was to bring an out-of-control man into control, to restrain him, to properly restrain him to the point where he no longer posed a threat to any of the officers responding to this call, and particularly to Chauvin himself. That's one of their arguments today. They also made the case via experts that George Floyd apparently killed himself through the use of drugs that were prohibited or illegal, and that these drugs had a cumulative effect on his system. Although he was a tall, strapping, 6'7" man, you certainly can't get away with a habitual use of these high-potency narcotics over a long period of time, as they alleged that George Floyd had, and still not have anything happen to you at your own direction, by your own hand. And that was one of the arguments. Nobody forced George Floyd to take these high potency medications. Floyd admitted that on a particular day he had been taking lots of Percocet and other habit-forming drugs because he was, he said, in great pain. Well, he's not a doctor, and these are not drugs that are made available willy-nilly. to the general public. They are controlled substances. So taking these controlled substances, and they're very powerful, over a period of time necessarily will have a direct effect on your body. Your body would break down. In this case, according to the expert, this had a direct effect on George Floyd's heart. The heart was noted by, in the posthumous report, the heart was much heavier than it needed to be. And his whole system was thrown off. Well, people say, well, what should the heart typically weigh? And they agreed that the heart was a little heavier because it had more pumping to do, because systems in his body were breaking down. The heart had to find new ways to pump extra blood to those parts of Floyd's body that were breaking down. Plus, these medications he was taking were naturally the kinds of medications that excited, that would put the heart into overdrive. And there would have come a time, in any event, that this constant upping the ante on the heart would cause the heart to give out. And that's what accounted for a heart attack in George Floyd. So they're going to argue that. They laid out the case that this was not a use of force that accelerated the heart to overreact, but that drugs taken by George Floyd accelerated even the pace at which his heart was beating. And it did give out. So the circumstances which were caused, I'm not saying this, that's what is being said, the circumstances that were caused by Floyd caused a consequence to Floyd. So that there is no legitimate way to hold Derek Chauvin responsible for causing these things to happen. The only person you could point a finger at is George Floyd. Then they say, they tackle the matter of Chauvin being the principal cause, if not the only cause, but the principal cause of George Floyd's death. And partly that was covered. I covered that in a minute or two ago. But they placed George Floyd at the center of his own demise. He would not follow and he would not surrender to the police and their instructions. He created the whole atmosphere. He was out of control. And even a curious mob, as they called it, called the people who were trying to get closer to observe what was going on, they saw them as a threat. And it was Chauvin's concern, because he was the most experienced police officer, that they have to get Floyd under control first and remove him from the scene in order for this mob not to start tackling them, but to dissipate, go away, disappear, whatever it is. But just not encroach any further on them, because they would be getting the officers, Chauvin and his officers, were beginning to interpret the crowd as being, quote, hostile, unquote. And therefore, their lives were in danger. So they had to get rid of the hostility that was growing. And the best way to do that is to get out of the area as quickly as possible with George Floyd. Well, I think those are the major arguments that they're trying to revisit and impress the jury, more than likely, that they may have come to a different conclusion about these separate things, but now is a time to reinforce to the jury that they need to really reconsider any prejudices that might have formed already. There's another explanation, perfectly understandable, because now you're getting it from a law enforcement and a use of force expert. I remind you, Chauvin is not testifying. That could be because he knows how antagonistic he is, and the antagonism he in turn will or possibly will cause by simply being in the same courtroom. And he will set off negative reactions. What was that? Okay. So that is possible as an explanation for why they're doing it this way. Secondly, they're concerned that Chauvin's persona is so negative. It has been translated to the world at large as him being a very negative guy, a racist guy, a callous and unfeeling man, that these feelings will translate into throwing the jury against him, and they will convict him just because of who he is and how they perceive him. All right, so now that's enough. I've taken about half of the program just explaining this, where the jury is now, and they are weighing the fate of Derek Chauvin with regard to these charges against him. And it's a delicate matter, because it's about offensive behavior or conduct translating into possible conviction. And you have to be very careful. So this is his last chance to impress the jury, even though he's not testifying. But this is his last chance to impress the jury that he's not as he has been portrayed. He is a very different person, but a lot is resting on it. Second degree unintentional murder, third degree murder, and second degree manslaughter. These are the charges facing him right now. And according to the judge today, he expects that the case will wrap up. They'll wrap up this case next week. 888-874-4888 is the number to call to react to where the case stands now and where it is likely to go. We'll take this break And when we come back, we'll hear from you. 888-874-4888. Right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.fm, and we're talking about the case continuing today and it heading toward finally an end. Although in the scheme of things, this wasn't a long case. It took only, what, not even a full 3 weeks yet. But it's a heavy case. It's a case generating a great deal of interest in many communities for many reasons. And let's hear what you're thinking about the case as it heads hopefully and mercifully toward an end. 888-874-4888 is the number to call to express yourself about your feelings on this case. Is this case going to end the way you want it to end? And what is your interpretation of how it should end? Should it generate a conviction? Should it be we had some people yesterday saying a hung jury, or should Derek Chauvin just walk? What do you say? 888-874-4888. I don't see you yet. What's going on? You're kind of getting slow these days. You need some vitamins. I expect you to be there, ready and waiting with bated breath. Maybe that's it. Bated breath does not smell good. So let's scratch the bated breath and just say you're excited to participate in this discussion today at 888-874-4888. What do you think, how do you think this case would end? And what personally are you hoping for? How do you think you want it to end? 888-874-4888. We start off today with Larry from Brooklyn. Hello, Larry.
Hi, Trace. I was getting really upset watching the so-called expert yesterday trying to defend the actions of the police department and trying to say that was normal behavior. But I'm not worried, and I feel he'll be convicted because even the police have to understand that even if he were to get off, that the city would go wild and there'd be riots all over and the city would burn down. So I think even if they want to defend him, they would have to sacrifice him because of the reaction.
Are you talking about Chauvin, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried about it. I think he'll go down for this. I don't want him to get off. And I think they realize that, too. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. That's it?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's why I'm not worried. I mean, I was getting upset watching them trying to defend him, and they said, well, maybe this is going to work, and he's going to get off. But then I thought about the public reaction, and I said, no, this guy is not getting off. So I'm not worried about it.
Okay, thank you so much for contributing today. 888-874-4888 E from Edgewater. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Good afternoon, E. What are your thoughts?
Well, I see two different things, and they're very drastically different. If they convict him, that'll be to placate the people and say, here, we finally gave you justice, and he's going away for a long time, so everybody can calm down now and get back to normal. Or they're going to let him go and try to infuriate the people so much that they want them to come out in groves and riot and do the same thing that they do in Myanmar, Burma, to people that come out and protest. And I don't put it
Myanmar,
past the government. Myanmar is
Yes.
Burma, right? They handle their protesters, they just gun them down in cold blood. The first day they shot 200 of them. Think this can happen in any country in the world. The same kind of treatment. So I'm worried about that. I hope the people keep their heads about them because they have, don't forget, it's 2021. And in the 1960s, the police did a lot of damage to people with just their nightsticks. 60 years later, you know they've developed a lot of new kinds of weapons, and they're just itching to get out and use them. Or they just do like they did last night. They put in agent provocateurs to mess up people's businesses and make it look like the black people are ruining their own neighborhoods. How do we know that those people that are doing the looting and the destruction and the burning aren't provocateurs? We don't know that for sure. So I'm worried about a lot of things here, and I'm just hoping
How
that things
are
go.
you? Where are you headed personally on this case?
Of the two choices that I'm thinking, yeah, I'm
Well, go ahead.
because of the virus, because of this vaccine, because of the way we're being manipulated into doing what they want us to do, like they've always been able to do to us. I'm worried that he's going to get off, and then it's going to be a long, hot summer of destruction and death. And like you're playing today, we don't need no more trouble. So.
All righty, thanks so much for contributing today.
Thank you, dear.
888-874-4888. We have only a matter of days to go before the case wraps up. The judge has already said that he expects it to wrap up next week, early next week. And we will have a decision once the jury goes into sequestration in order to consider where they fall in this case, which side they're going to take, and more importantly, what will be the reaction at the street level? How will people react and receive any decision? What would happen if the jury decides to convict? What would happen if the jury decides to acquit? These are the kinds of tensions. We don't need this kind of trouble, but it is coming. 888-874-4888. In this trial so far, as it ends, what also would you say was the most significant thing about this trial, either significantly good or significantly bad? What troubled you? A lot of people are using that word. This troubled me. I saw this. I witnessed that in the course of the case, but and I didn't like that. It bothered me. And some people are still holding on to hope that justice will prevail. But what does that mean? Conviction, and then what? We've been down this road many times before as well, and we can't say that we have had an overabundance of justice. We just can't say that. I don't think we could honestly lay claim to that contention. Let's see, we have somebody coming in right now, Brother David from Brooklyn. You're on the air.
Yes, I have been thinking about this case, and what comes to mind to me is this is a case that has worldwide effect. People all over the world know about this case. So this is a very difficult thing in this case, because this has to do with a police person. And in the event this person is not convicted of something, there might be, protests going on all over the country and maybe all over the world. If it was up to me, I would look at this as a murder case. Maybe a second-degree murder case, and that would be it. I can't go for the idea that someone can be stepping on someone's neck, and that is a possible police procedure for putting someone under control. That doesn't make any sense. It's common sense it should be to know that that could be easily fatal. So there might be some people on the jury for various reasons who might want to acquit a person like that, especially white phenotype policemen. And that might be a problem if there's a hung jury. However, that person may be willing to go with the lower charge of manslaughter. And I think that'll all be taken into consideration in the minds of the people on the jury. They'll be thinking about the things I'm talking about the repercussions if they let this person get away with murder. So that's the way I think about it.
How typical do you think, or how prevalent do you think your opinion is at this time?
I think that it's very prevalent. We're dealing with a number of things here. We're dealing with the fact that we live in a society where we have a very definite caste system. The defendant, this what we call white phenotype, and the victim of this crime is a black person, what we call the black phenotype. Those are two castes, and the white caste is the higher caste here, and the other person, the victim, is in a lower caste. So as it goes here, the victim is at a disadvantage in terms of any transaction that is against him by a person in the higher caste. I mean, I think that's very clear. You know, there's a lot of history about how some people in some castes get lighter sentences than the others. So, you know, that's the way I see it. The jury has to be very careful in their deliberations. And I know with the lower charge, the lowest charge that he can get, the manslaughter charge, they have some way of giving light sentences and, maybe parole or something to get him off the hook even after he gets a conviction. So that's the way I look at it. And, you know, this is a very difficult case for me. I've seen murders, and it's not pleasant. So that's the way I see it.
All right. Thank you so much. Just to remind listeners, the jury hearing this case consists of 2 white men, 4 white women, 3 black men, 1 black woman, and 2 women who identify themselves as mixed race. And there are 2 alternates. Two alternates are white women, and there's 1 man, also white, who is an alternate. So that's the makeup of the jury. 888-874-4888. Gary from Hempstead, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, indeedy. Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Thank
you. What are your thoughts?
Couple of quick thoughts. Number one, just piggybacking on a thought I had from, I think it was E. I think that that Chauvin is going to need to be the sacrificial lamb. I think that there have been too many killings of unarmed black people that have not resulted in what the community would consider justice. As opposed to settlement, which you helped me really see the difference of about a year ago. You started talking about justice versus a settlement. So I think they're going to need to offer him up. There have been other police officers I know convicted. I know the gentleman in South Carolina who shot Walter, I believe Scott, in the back was convicted. The man who killed, I think, Laquan McDonald in Chicago, he was convicted. But I think there have been too many since then, and even the most recent one in Minnesota with the 20-year-old man. So I think they might have to give him up. The other point I wanted to make is, you know, there's a lot of emphasis and discussion about if this man is let off, how the black community and communities of color will react. Nobody really talks about what happens if this man is convicted. How will the white community react? Because that's the other side of the coin, which could have very detrimental and dangerous consequences for communities of color. Should that happen? So I just wanted to kind of throw that out. You also asked about what kind of stood out to me in this case, if there was anything that really stood out. The one thing that really came across to me was how the levels of resistance were emphasized throughout this case. And I think that will be probably utilized and emphasized in future cases. And I think that what that does and how it's presented can tend to discount a normal human reaction to being traumatized. You know, when someone is frightened, they may act in a way that appears to be resistance if they are trying to maybe, as Mr. Floyd was shown, to try to get more breath. So he turned his body in a certain way, or he pushed his knuckle against the wheel. Or, you know, they may twist and turn a certain way or react a certain way out of fear or incredible discomfort. I don't think that black and especially black and brown people are given the luxury of that level of humanity and just reacting on a normal human level to trauma. So that's kind of one of the things that stood out to me. Those are the points I wanted to make today.
And you made them very well.
Thank you
so much for contributing today. Thank you,
absolutely,
Gary, for calling in. G from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Oh, how you doing, Yatrice? How are you? Let me just turn it off here. Okay. I haven't been following it a whole lot, just here and there. These cases are kind of always bothersome and hurtful. But what I would say, one thing that I see in these situations is what I would call the situation or the fear situation or the setup situation, where the person of color often is afraid of the police when they have an encounter. They got reason to fear. They know it. And they want to just get home or get wherever they're going, right? And you have the police officer who at times is fearful too. He or she is afraid of the person that they're encountering. Okay. And they later say, well, they had a gun or they thought they had a gun. Oftentimes they didn't. And at times it's proven that the police person really didn't have anything to fear, but that's what they say, and there probably is some justification. So each party has a fear to some level, whether it's actual or not. But the difference is that the police person has the authority to carry a gun, you know, automatically from his job, her job. They're trained, all of that. And they got the backing of a state apparatus. They know what can happen to them if they fall under a prosecution for a killing. They know that the prosecuting side works with them. They know they got certain training. And they got to know, let's say in this case with Mr. Chauvin, he probably knows if he does certain things, what he can get away with. After all, he was in a police officer for 18, 19 years, yet he has a record of violence. Well, how is it that didn't come all the way out and dismiss him earlier? He probably learned how to deal so that he can maintain himself. This is just my speculation, but I'm sure it's not far from the thoughts of many. So we know that the police often have a way to know how to manipulate. I'm not saying that all cops are bad, but I'm saying that there's a situation in there that they know that they got going for them. Now, the person that they're encountering, what have they got? Well, they may have scattered support. They may have the support of their mom, the love of their mom, their children, their wives, their whomever in their community. But as far as a state apparatus that's going to back them, probably don't know that. Might not have that. Do they have a gun? We find often that they didn't. I've heard where they had a candy bar. That's not going to defend you. A cell phone, that's not going to defend you. A lot of things they may have had, not going to offend them. But look at Mr. Castile. He told the cop he had a gun, a licensed gun. Told him. Now, we know what happened in the end, and it was videotaped. He got shot. He's no longer here. So I would say there's a situation that has a fear piece in it. It has a state support piece. How much support do you have, Mr. Person? How much support does a police person have? And, you know, when it comes out that there's a shooting, how much of the police person's record is going to come out? But you said, it's been said, that his 20-year cycle, his 19-year cycle of violence didn't really come out. It didn't come out that they might have worked at the same place. Didn't come out.
But let me ask you then, what would you consider a just outcome in this case.
I think all the records should have come out. But in the end, I saw, this is the piece that I saw that really slapped me in the face, where the people were saying to him, Chauvin, you know, you help him, you know, stop doing it, you're killing him, you're hurting him. And the point where he shoved his hands in his pockets and had an expression of, I ain't doing a doggone thing else. I don't know if that piece was shown or not. But to
there's a photograph. Yes, there's a photograph. But personally, what will you just outcome in this case?
Well, I would be looking for him to be convicted and sent away. Because he showed such a, I ain't doing, Mr. Chauvin.
Yes.
Showed such a refusal to get off that person. And, you know, like, I don't care no matter what. I'm going to do this now. Kind of attitude, but I was, you know, I live in the United States. Do I think I'm going to get that? I think there may be some time, you know, maybe the manslaughter or maybe the depraved indifference to life. He may do something. He may, he may appeal because they got the attorneys backing him from the union. I don't see how they could do that because he's no longer a cop, but they may say, well, we're defending him from the point of view of when he was a cop. But I would just say I would be looking for a strong conviction. But I say that with trepidation as to whether it would come all the way out like that, you know?
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your participation today. Thank you. Vera from Brooklyn, you don't have too much time, but you have enough time to make your point.
Okay. You talking to me?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. I don't have much time, huh? Okay. Well, I watched it from the very beginning in jury selection, and I believe that he's going to be convicted. And the thing that bothers me about the trial is that they did not keep bringing up the fact that he was supposed to resuscitate him when he stopped talking. They didn't do that. They didn't bring. They brought it up once. I thought I heard it a couple of times, but they should have spoke about that several times. That he had the obligation to turn him over and resuscitation when he stopped talking, when he couldn't say he couldn't breathe. They should have pulled him over, turned him on to the side, and they should have resuscitated him. They didn't do that. He stayed on his neck all that time, and the film shows definitely that he was on the neck. He wasn't on his back. He wasn't. His knee was on. Wasn't on his back. It was on his neck. So I think they're going to. I do think they should. They should convict this guy of second degree murder.
What was the deciding factor for you in coming to this conclusion?
That he's going to be convicted? The jury. Everybody on that jury felt that what they did was wrong. Everybody on there, practically all of them, felt that way.
You think
so? Every one of them. All but one or two. But I think they're going to have a long deliberation.
And what will be at the center of the deliberation, do you think?
Will be the center is that no matter what they say about the drugs and all that stuff, the fact that he didn't give him any medical attention at all, and even when the ambulance came, he stopped breathing and he had no pulse. He knew he didn't have no pulse. What was he always sitting on his neck for? Why was he staying on that? He showed depraved indifference. That's what he showed, depraved indifference to that man's life.
Well, I hate to use this word because it might be misinterpreted, but I'm glad you're the last caller today, because I think people will remember what you said. You said it with such passion and such clarity. And I thank you so much, Vera, for calling in today and contributing to the program. You made the program today. Thank
you. Okay, very good. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of the program today. And, of course, the situation will continue. We'll see what surprises await us tomorrow. Thanks for listening. And write the number down. Keep it close to your phone. 888-874-4888. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.